Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast.
Dude, I am so proud of us, Dr. Payray. We are getting after it this season.
We are. I'm very impressed because we not only went to Voices of Dentistry, we did a podcast a day before. And we went to Voices, we did a podcast on the plane, and then we come back, we're doing a podcast right after.
I mean, we are, which typically we were doing one a month was good for us.
Because we were on the curve of like, you know how we really needed to have a season and some months off, like to, what do you call them? What do they call, like dumb time or sometime like where you just kind of relax?
Recharge.
Yeah, a sabbatical is like the word.
Yeah, that word, yes. I don't know how you spell that, but
I don't either.
But yeah, kind of like the time where you kind of get re-energized. What are we doing? What's the plan? What do I need to do to grow and make this podcast better? One of the things we like to do and what I felt like it helps tremendously is some of the episodes where we bring in folks that talk about management of the office. I feel like those are crazy good. Like I get a lot of response or feedback, especially from like Fortune Management, some of those Paul Bates.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
That helps a lot. Now, of course, one of the other questions we get a lot is going through CEs. Like, oh, what CE should I take? CEs? So, number one question really DM I get is like, oh, where do I start? So, maybe we could talk about some of the CEs somehow. Like, for example...
What CE, what are you recommending these days?
So, right now, I'm pretty much telling folks what I felt like it would have helped me tremendously if I went to COIS about 1 or 2 years right after school.
Do you think that's when we talk about COIS, you know, I'm doing Spear, COIS,
or Spear.
A Continuum, Mingy Panky, I guess even. Do you feel like that's too heady for someone right out of school, or you feel like it's good to do that?
I think this is what I felt like some people told me that, the ones that who had not been to the course of the courses or Spears, or they think that, or they said that, oh, these courses are probably a little bit advanced. However, I think it's not necessarily the course that you're going to or the CE. I think it's the mentality of how courses and Spears they're looking at.
I'll give you that.
So it's like not exactly saying, hey, by the way, you need to do mounted this way and this. It's not really the technicals that they understand. I felt like one of the things COIS, John, made me be aware of seeing things is that, hey, look at the big picture.
That's a great way to put it, the big picture.
If you become
not
that dentist.
Not tooth by tooth dentistry.
Right. Don't become doing this too, because he really, the first course that I went, that took a week, and it was just mind-blowing. And that was about 3 years after dental school, and I was in a room, mostly older folks that looked at me, they're like, wow, I wish I did it really at your age. So that's whenever people were saying that and they're telling me that, I felt like, man, this is actually helping me because now I see things differently, like with patients. So before they start doing and getting into the rhythm of, you know how they say, we say that it's better to get trained, a new trainee, like somebody where they haven't had bad habits.
Yeah, like a new
because
system.
Some of the things with, I think, Spears or COIS that a lot of folks don't get is that they start looking at not the front teeth, they're looking at the problem that patient came in with and they're trying to get that patient from whatever insurance purposes or whatever it is, and they forget that why did this happen? We had some episode in the back, going back to the podcast of the CEs that talked about the digestive system. Remember the medicine of how the body affects it. So I think there's a lot more to that CE. So I don't want to run off the tangent here.
No, but I think you make a lot of, I think that's a lot of great points. I guess my part of me thinks that that first year,
mm-hmm.
I almost feel like needs to be just like a survival year.
Probably, yeah.
Just
I
because
agree.
it's
to find your identity.
Yeah. And it kind of just to kind of like get your feet wet a little, because you know, you graduate, you've done like 15 crowns,
right?
Or so many fillings.
Nothing, really.
Nothing. Yeah. Exactly. So
you don't even know how to properly numb, to be honest.
You don't really know how to numb good. So I think it's, you know, that first year, you just kind of survive.
Right.
You know, I would not.
So don't you think like corporate wouldn't be a bad idea, honestly, at the beginning?
I mean, it's just.
By corporate, guys, I mean DSO, any sort of.
It's the Dale, the question, you know, GPR, AGD, corporate, you know, prior practitioner. At the end of the day, I think it's less, that first year, it's less about where you go, but more about that you have the opportunity to learn. And so, you know, because I think we have a problem too, is that we come out of school and we want to find like the lifetime dream job right away.
Right.
And like, if you think about it, how many times do people stay in the same job from when they graduate, whatever schooling it is? Very rarely. So I think really we should have a little bit more of a shorter term view on that. Of
also the procedures too, like you said, a lot of people want to do implants. Speaking of implants, we have
a guest here.
We're gonna introduce him. But speaking of the implants, and some of these people want to just do the shiny stuff, like, oh, I want to do this because I've heard it's good or make you money, and I really like titanium. And next thing you know, they hate blood and surgery, but they want to use guide and not learn the whole proper. So it's like so much more to where I agree with you completely. As far as the first year would be a lot beneficial if you just kind of focus on who you are and what you want and where you are before start taking a lot of CEs here and there and get your mind mixed up into, oh, I got to do this. Because don't you think it's also a poor idea to get out of school and go to a bunch of weekends, different guys, different mentality, different things. And then you're like, shoot, I'm confused now. Versus if it's a Spear or DOS or somebody who has, okay, listen to this type of system, whatever it is, at least
they're going to like cornerstone your mindset,
which
is important. And I think, and at the end of the day, I think you're exactly right. I think you got to get into one of those. I think it's incredibly critical to, I mean, because I'll never forget the day I came back from facial generated treatment planning. Yeah. It was the same way. I will never see teeth differently because I used to look tooth by tooth right now. Okay, two has distal decay, three has this, just like we did in dental school. And now I look and I'm like, wow, I just see.
It's an all on four.
or occlusal disease or parafunction or recession.
There's so much more.
I think it's critical. We do have a guest. typically, we introduce our guests before 7 minutes of the show. But and I do want to disclaimer this. We are very fortunate to be drinking some nice 15-year-old Pappy Van Winkles.
Van Winkles.
A 2011.
Wow.
Edition. This is nice.
How is it 2011, but it's 15 years old?
Well, so 15 years would be the time it aged in the bottle. This was bottled in 2011.
So it's technically now a 23 year old.
So,
anyways, without further ado, Daniel Owen.
What's up, guys?
Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for
first
having
time
me.
Podcaster.
Yes,
you're welcome.
First time ever.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, glad to be here.
In fact, if anybody wants to bring us an 18-year-old bottle of bourbon. We'll happily let you come on the podcast.
Yes,
absolutely.
It's a good way to get on the podcast.
We love having Daniel here. It's actually funny. We were talking about you in Arizona, and so about like Neodent, because there were Neodent guys in the course, Joe's course, the brighter way.
Nice.
And they were talking. They knew you and everything. So, by the way, we are talking with Daniel Owens. Where are you from? Can you go ahead?
Yeah, sure. So,
give us a little bit of your dental background.
Definitely. Been in dental for almost be 7 years this year. So it's kind of flown by. Spent 5.5 years at Patterson Dental as a rep in North Alabama. And then the last year and a half, I've been with Neodent Division of Straumann Group. So, but it's funny, you guys talking about, you know, what students should do. I saw a lot of bad mistakes, you know, worked with a lot of students out of UAB. And, so that's some of my background, just Patterson and now doing implants specifically.
Well, and I got to give you credit. We've both been, you know, pretty big BioHorizon guys, still BioHorizon gear, right? Like the implants, placing a ton of them. But you definitely, I got to give you credit. You kind of stayed on us and wanted to give you an opportunity and we did a case together and y'all have a cool deal with, you know, I will pitch that. If you are looking to get in the implant industry or you're doing implant industry and you want to do something cool for a veteran, are y'all still doing that? Is it still
100%. Yeah. Yeah. So
you tell them what the program is.
Yeah. So we offer trial surgeries, of course, just about any time, any day, but we also like to do, we have a charity type veteran program where if a doctor approaches us and says, hey, I've got this veteran, maybe can't afford the treatment or can only afford a partial of it. Yeah, we'll provide everything that they need from the implants all the way to the restorative components so that the lab bill is even cutting to some degree. So, yeah, so done a couple of those. And I know other of my colleagues, and it's just always fun, man. That's, you know, that's probably one of the most rewarding things. I know you guys get to see that a lot more than we do as reps.
I'm actually impressed with Daniel. I want to tell you a story from when he came to the office first time in our office, My New Smile. He was with Neodent sale. I think it was a sales
One of our managers,
And he was very, very brand new into the whole implant market.
Yeah, yeah.
And like...
But he knows his shit.
But now, you talk to him, he knows so much to where I'm like, it's damn. Impressive. Very impressed because what he's doing is really like he understands it, but also he's very hands-on. That's another thing I like about him. He's actually come into the room and get down dirty with us, so which is cool, you know?
No, it's super straight. Yeah, yeah, go.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, check the food.
He's going to get the filet mignon. I'm kidding.
Filet mignon.
But no, so what do you think? What do you think as far as the whole thread designs?
People are like, gosh, y'all are big bio. We first off, we're still bio.
So tell me
people.
Before bio, what did you use?
So that's it. That's how I play. So I place three implants now. Yeah, I guess three. It plays BioHorizons a lot. That's what I was learning. You know, a lot of times
and
what
happens
is... your
dad was doing bio before?
No, actually. So let me kind of back up.
Yeah.
So dad placed, I guess, Straumann back in the day. But that was, I guess, when they were... What were they called?
The BL...
Stereos. He was placing Stereos back in like the 90s, which most people haven't even heard of. And then he was placing OsteoReady, which is now something different.
Right.
Now,
yeah. A little bit.
And then... Yeah, the little implant. And then when I got my training at the Foundry in Birmingham at Alabama Implant Education, we started doing BioHorizons. And I got him to switch over. And we've had, you know, a ton of success with it. We really like BioHorizons. And they've been a great company to work with, great rep. And I had the opportunity to then place some Astrotech implants with for that case we did. Kind of another kind of charity deal where we got the implants donated and they were great with that. And I didn't love the implant. That was my first exposure with an implant other than BioHorizons. It was a parallel implant, very different than bio, and I just didn't love it. And then, you know, the hard part is you don't, you get comfortable. One, I think rep support is the most important wherever you are. I think it's less, no offense, Daniel, but I think it's similar. It's less about the implant sometimes, especially when you're picking the company to go with. And a lot of it's about support, who's going to support you. And so we had a great support. Well, then, you know, you came to us and we had the opportunity to do something for a veteran and we did that. And it was an awesome experience. And, you know, I really liked some, it kind of opened my eyes. Okay, maybe we'll give this a try. And I've been super pumped about using Neodent for some full arch stuff. The things I like about it, I don't know, and you tell me what you, I mean, obviously thread design I think is fine. It's aggressive implant, which I like. To me, one of the big ones I love about it is it's all the same platform. So from a restorative standpoint, the multi-units are all the same. And there's no, and that's a really nice feature because you don't have to think about different platforms and trying to get, you know, from an inventory standpoint, that thing makes things really simple. And then I also love the connection, you know, the Morse taper connection. It's a deep connection. The multi-units are really slender coming out. The neck's real slender. So yeah, I've been super pumped about, you know, we did a dual arch today and it went great.
Now you use the Aqua Helix, the new version of
We use Drive and Helix today, which was, that's kind of a protocol that we've seen some of our bigger partners that do a lot of full arches.
Right.
Have used our more compressive implant in the upper arch and then a little more aggressive just because of the bone type. So, you know, just that's the great thing about, and there's, look, BioHorizons, I'm one of those reps that I respect my competition. BioHorizons is a good company. They do, I think they probably, out of all the companies, do probably one of the best jobs with doctors who are just now getting into the implant game.
And the support.
Getting people on board. You know, that's always the biggest challenge. But I think one of the things I would say that, you know, we talked about, this is kind of what we talked about in the background, was, you know, you guys have, as practitioners, GPs, prosthodontists, all these have a perception of reps, you know, and that's on our colleagues, because we've sometimes just come across as the, hey, dog, you know, use this, is better than this. But I think the approach that has worked for me, and I think one that you guys would agree about, is that I like to try to find, hey, what's an area that I can help you grow?
Or a niche, right? Yeah.
And so, you know, you got to know your product line, but more importantly, I think the more you can discover about, you know, your practice and your practice have two totally different needs. You're both trying to accomplish successful goals.
We're all trying to be like Dr. Perry. Right? It's really
what but if we were to uncover, like, say, if we were able to open up a book and go, where's Sullivan Dental Partners and where is New Smile?
My New Smile.
You know, where are these practices at today and what are their needs? There's probably something that I do that can help with that. And I think that that's the conversation that I try to have. And honestly, I wish more practitioners would give us the time to have, instead of just saying this, well, what's your cost and what's better about yours? Versus, it's almost like, well, hey, I'm not necessarily trying to disrupt your whole world. I would like to try to find an area that maybe I can help you grow that the other company maybe just doesn't focus on.
The problem is that a lot of guys, like dentists that are providers, like for such as myself, we become very impatient when it comes to buying or changing from something that we're so used to, not only because that we're
happy, our team's used to too.
That's another thing. Just talk about how the team, now of course the team is more really on you. If you're a good leader, they're going to follow you, they're going to respect that. But honestly, at the end of the day, I feel like we get scarred, like providers, because not every rep really thinks the way you do. For example, what you just said before, you mentioned your product line and all of the bullshit about the design and things. You were talking about what the Sullivan Dental Partner needs, where I can help them. Now,
you didn't tell me that, like, screw that implant, switch over the hair. You're like, look, I think for what you're doing, you know, full arches could be a good solution for us to kind of do that. And it's not a, you know, because if that wouldn't have worked in our office. If someone come and said, we want you to switch, you know, for starters, we've invested a ton of money in bio, right? Like everything, ton of kits, pieces,
learning,
parts,
just the learning aspect.
Support, and I'm a loyal guy.
So it's
guy,
hard
so
to change
just, it's hard
or
to
not only change, but also things. Making to where, is it really actually clinically working and I can back it up after a while of charging $40,000, $50,000 case? Because that's another part, you know? There are other companies that are cheaper implants. They're $80, $90, $120, $130, $140. But do they really do the job for me? Now, maybe psychologically, I don't know. Do they? Because, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, the titanium is not really, all titanium are not similar. I feel like there's still a difference between the grade. And you know what? One of the thing is, for example, the company that does, so these get milled, all these titanium rods that come in. So these machines that mill these units, now the first one that mills the cutters or whatever it has to be, it's not going to be the same as the 100th one,
right?
You know?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
How much really going over looking at these, the protocol and the, I don't know, I feel like
that's why I don't
difference.
Like buying. That's why I believe that you should, at the end of the day, you should buy a name brand implant 100%. That has some sort of support and some sort of research.
Yeah. I mean, or like, have some also on top of what you said, also have great leaders or providers, teachers that have done kids. For example, why did I start BioHorizon from Implant Direct? I don't even know why we keep calling these names. Like, do we need like permission or something?
I don't give a shit.
Okay, so when we switched, it was all about Dr. Picos. So I went to his course and he showed from 1991 or 89, 88, where he was practicing or putting implants to his educational center. He said, here's what I'm using and here's, and that's where I was like, okay,
and here
Picos
it is 30 years ago. Yeah.
Right. And if he did it, let me do it. So that was, for me, it was a big turning point to kind of follow people like that and in his
important.
Magnitude. Yeah.
Well, and you're not going to, and look, I mean, at the end of the day, you need, our industry needs to be innovative and pushing it.
100%.
And buying 100%. A $100 implant from you name the third party, isn't, they're not doing that.
Right. What research and development? So like it's one thing to buy something that's a copycat that's just cheaper versus something that's like, so for instance, the implants we're talking about, these new GM implants, there's 16 years of R&D that went into that implant before we went to market. Right. So it wasn't like we just said, hey, let's throw an implant out there that we can disrupt. It's like, and that's what a lot of these newer implant companies do. They just go, let's take this design, copy it, throw it out there. That's a partner that's really just trying to save you money at that point, but doesn't really have the research to go, hey, this is better for your practice, right? And like you said, I agree. I think a lot of times the implant is, you know, there are some design features that here and there, but for the most part, it comes down to, honestly, the support, right? And then the clinical results, right? Like, I mean, that's the key.
Well, and we're not advocating, I'm not advocating buying a $350, $400 implant either. I mean, I think you can get a very affordable implant you know, well between $200-$300. That's
easily,
that you can make money on that. Yeah. It's not that expensive, but at the same time, it's supporting hopefully a company that can do that. And I just think at some point that's important. And then the other part is you're going to get rep support. I mean, both those companies, we've done it. And so where you're at, depending on, and look, not all bio reps are good. Not all neonate reps are good, right? So like you could come to me and you could be in, I don't know, Austin, Texas or LA or Portland or whatever. And it may be that like you use a totally different implant just because your support's better. And to me, that's important.
It is. People buy from people, not from companies.
Well, some people buy from companies but at the end of the day, they're
order takers.
Yeah. Well, and
they're not reps.
Well, they are, that side of it is. I'm talking about the doctors who are doing that though. I would argue you are self-limiting yourself. Because I don't think that the super successful dentists are just buying things based off the dollar.
I think things change too.
You don't buy every product. You buy products that you could buy cheaper somewhere else.
Right. Like, I think from what you're saying, this is what I'm sensing you're saying also, that when you're buying, if the doctor who is paying $400, $500 for some of this stuff and not having that communication or the rep support is going to miss out on the boat of there's so much changes with other companies that it's going on that is doing more than that $400 that you're not aware of because you're continuous, like you're just kind of in your own mind.
Yeah.
Is that what you kind
of... Well,
there's
like, that. And the flip side of it is at the other end, the doctor who's only buying $100 implants from
limiting themselves from practice,
you know,
yeah,
it, whatever, isn't getting, they're limiting themselves because they're not going to have the support or someone pushing them or,
yeah.
Well, I was going to ask y'all a question. Y'all said something earlier that really kind of triggered some of my Patterson Day thoughts. And I was, y'all talking a lot about like courses and where do people right out of school go to. And one of the things that like I saw a lot of, maybe a mistake, and I want to get y'all's feedback on this, was I don't think enough, let's say, first 2 year out of school dentists ask the question of where they're going, in the sense of it's more focused on, you know, what am I going to make and can I make this work, instead of what are kind of dentistry are you doing?
It's student loan driven.
Like,
and
it's
that's
like,
not
it's
their
like,
fault, it, though. That's their mentality and vision in dental school is so limited, unfortunately, because we are so surrounded by just how to get to the next day by passing and getting 80s and 70s, that your mentality is into, now I'm doing all this hard work, I want to get raised, I want to get make money, I'm going to get pay off this student loan. So the mind is kind of in the phase where it's very distracted.
Would you say that you guys made the most money when you invested in yourselves to learn more?
I joke all the time. The more money I spend, the more money I make.
Because you're talking about Picos and talking about COIS and all this. Yeah. And so wouldn't the better question be, if I'm a student, no matter where I'm going, not course-wise, but I'm going into a DSO or I'm going into a private practice, wouldn't the better question be, instead of what I'm going to make, is where am I going to be as a clinician in 2 years?
100%.
How can you? So if I came to work for you, so, yeah, Dr. Raisi, how could you guarantee me that in 2 years I'll be proficient at these skill sets, implants, you know, ortho, whatever it is that I want? Like, and I think knowing that I accept the job, to go, you can guarantee me I'm going to be this type of dentist in 2 years, because we all know this. If you're doing these things in 2 or 3 years, the income's going to follow, right? I mean, if I'm doing these type of services and doing them well, right, I'm going to get paid for them. But if I don't learn how to do them well and it takes me 5 years to learn something that should have taken me two, right? Now I'm behind the eight ball to some degree because I'm just still doing, you know, drill, bill, and fill, or drill, fill, and bill dentistry, right? I mean, am I wrong about that?
Like, no, I think you're absolutely right that you're saying that there should be a visionary approach from them thinking that when they're entering any of these circumstances, what is that going to bring them?
Making like, decisions based on more of a long-term view.
Long-term view, like don't get out, don't just look at the immediate result. Is I think what you're saying, immediate satisfaction, gratification. Kind of like that's kind of what we get, like millennials, they say that, oh, they want to see the result right away because that's what YouTube gives them or Google gives them. Now, why dentistry should not be the same, you know, and that's sometimes, unfortunately, for some people get lucky. Like I felt like one of my biggest thing was I got kind of lucky in getting into a corporate that the owner gets sick and I just kind of grew. Now that also comes with a lot of responsibilities, but that kind of pushed me. However, not everybody gets that way. What am I saying is that there are some, unfortunately, students that get out of school and they want to be visionary. They want to get into that growth phase, but they get into that wrong practice at the wrong time. And then their whole vision changes and their mentality about dentistry changes. And there are also there are other people that get into dentists, the young dental students that finish and they work with other professional leaders and some great, but they don't want to work. They are lazy. So there are just so many of that goes on, which at the end of the day, I always say it goes really down to the heart and the person that gets out of school more than anybody else that could help them.
Well, I think one of the other ways you could look at it would be like this. So when you go to a dental school, right, you choose or you apply for different dental schools, right? And you kind of make a contract with them. I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars times 100, right? And I'm going to get this for it, right? I mean, you go to dental school to get your degree and get the I think you should take, as a dental student right out of dental school, take the same approach you did for dental school like you would for wherever you're going to be placed, right? Doctor, you're going to pay me to come work for you, but what am I getting out of that at the end of this in 2, 3, 4, 5 years? Because if you took that same mentality, you wouldn't go to a dental school that you said in 4 years, I'm not going to know as much as I did when I started. Right. No. If you went to dental school and you left 4 years later and you're like, I didn't really learn anything. And now I got $300,000 of debt. You'd be like this. Like, so why would you go work for somebody that's going to actually pay you to work for them? And in 3 years, you're not going to be any further along.
Because it's student loan driven. That's the problem, right? Is because we make decisions based off this big number holding our heads, and it's emotionally and not rationally. Because the rational thing is that what I think both of us would agree on is that it's ironic. The more freaking money I spend on education, the more money I make. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, like, literally, the better I get.
And that's not just skills. I think that's also networking our opportunities that the people that you also met in
100%. I mean, look at the people we get to hang out with.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, oh my gosh, y'all. Like, I mean, and right. it's less about us. It really is.
Right.
It's just more about the mindset of, okay, we're going to do what we need to do to put ourselves in position to succeed. And that's it. And so how do we get to hang out with people? We get to hang out because we paid money to go to CE and figure out how to work it. I mean, I took Dagum Lending Club like a patient to go to Pinhole. You know, like I was like, okay, well, what's it going to cost? Well, okay, I don't have that kind of money. Like I'll go out there and learn how to do it, you know, and you get in, like, you make it happen,
right?
The things
you do, right, to make it happen.
So I think that's ultimately the big thing is people got to step back and say, okay, yeah, what do I got to do? And the same thing is, it's the same, whether even if you're not a new grad and you're listening, it's the same thing for the associate that's listening. That's like, should I go out and buy a practice? Should I start up? Am I ready? You're never ready, you know? But at some point, you just have to make the decision that says, you know what? I'm betting on myself. We're going out there and we're making it happen.
A question for me that comes now, I shouldn't probably be asking this, but I'm thinking of for you guys, like you, for example, that are married too and now have kids. How much does that change for kids that get married in dental school and now graduate? Now they have not only wife, but they have kids, and then they got loans, and then they got the office that's not really going to help. Like, how much stressful can that get?
Well, you only have, you know, I think my word of the year this year is bandwidth. Because,
bandwidth.
You know,
a good one.
And for me, like, it's been funny because being married now, I guess I'm married, it'll be 6 years in August, but I got a 2-month-old now. So, like, I'm finally having to realize that, like, wow, I only have so much bandwidth. And the reality is that the more I put into something else comes down. And I can't just go all full bore in profession. So, you're exactly right. I mean, you, I mean, all the decisions we make have implications.
So how could those people, what I'm saying is, so, that, is CE going to help them, or they really need therapy?
Well,
bourbon.
It may be a little of both for all three. But, you know, you have to prioritize and say, okay, well, is it my practice? Because you can't have it all, you know, and like, it's okay. Well, for me, it's this year, it's like, okay, I want my practice to succeed. I want marriage to succeed. I want my dad, me being a dad, to succeed. And at the same time, I want my, all this other side hustle crap to succeed. So that means that, okay, I got to cut back somewhere. So I'm trying to cut back in the practice, or, you know, I may not be able to go on, like, we do a boys ski trip every year. I'm not going to go on the ski trip this year because that'd be another weekend that I'm gone from Caroline and Hugh. So it's a sacrifice that I have to make, because I'm willing to make that sacrifice because it's important to me that these other things happen. And so for the person who's like, well, gosh, I'm married, I have kids, and I'm trying to build this practice, where can you create time? Where can you create more? Where can you either get more bandwidth, either by buying it, sleeping less, or what can you get rid of to give you more bandwidth? Because your practice has to take so much. And if you don't put the time and effort in the CE and the education, you can't do what the heck we do without the education we're doing.
Right. Not only that, but also the opportunity that we got in, for example, you here, me being at corporate, where it was kind of management for me going.
Sure.
And then I would take off. So when some of these folks, then I'm glad we're bringing some of these up, because I think sometimes people have to sit back and ask themselves, are they ready for that move of buying a practice?
Yeah.
Or even if the practice is for free, you just have to show up and pay rent. Is it even worth it?
So let me ask you this, Pawan. Do you show up, and what time do you get the office tip?
6:45. Right now I'm supposed to show up. Well, okay, let me.
When do you start seeing patients?
7 o'clock. IV starts going into the vein at 7 a.m.
I love it.
Because that IV, if it goes 7:01, I get very upset.
When are you done for the day?
I like to finish around 2 or 3. Like, that's pretty much where I'm looking around.
But then, but that's clinically. So, but then how much time are you spending on your practice?
Oh, after that, I'll stay about 5 or 6 some days.
And then you work weekends?
And then weekends, I have to pretty much do other stuff, such as like speaking, if I'm doing a PowerPoint or if I'm doing some of that things, and that's afterwards. But that is, that's
so
pretty much
the reality is, it's like, it's a lot of work.
Oh my gosh. I mean, this is another thing. We don't want to say that, are those Brussels? Oh, bro. So the point of it is, I don't think that as I'm looking at fries, I'm salivating here. Saying is, it's really much true about how much time you put in is how much money you're going to make, right?
Like, 100%.
You cannot just expect it to run it on its own. Like, even right now, I was asking you, what did I ask? Is that how can I get systems? How can I get systems down? Because I'm still kind of struggling on some of these things that need to be run. Like, I need to have protocols.
I think this is probably the most powerful conversation that you guys should have with other clinicians, because you guys are phenomenal doctors. And I'm not saying that I've done last year, I did over almost 300 surgeries, right? So I've seen a lot of dentistry. And I think the reality is, we're sitting here talking to two successful doctors who are still trying to figure out the business management side of dentistry. It's probably the biggest hurdle I think you guys face.
Sure.
Because what you guys do, like a half a semester, if that, in dental school, on the business side of dentistry, it's really about picking out a building and paying off
your
loan.
It's not even the business side. I feel like it's more like
HR.
Yeah.
Yeah, human. That's right. Sure. What I mean by business, I mean like managing your team.
It's not
managing
clinical.
It's not clinical. Right. No, right. Exactly. And I think that there's a lot of misinformation in that area, because I think, like we said before, people try to make a cookie cutter. And the reality is, when you hire people, I look at it that I'm making an investment in them, and hopefully I'm getting a return on my investment, right? I look at people as investment equity, not what am I getting out of this person? Like, how much are they producing? And I think when you flip that script, like there's a, have you ever heard of the 5 love languages? It's a book, famous book, Gary Chapman. I think we've talked a little bit about this, but instead of looking at people from a checks and balance, you look at people more like a bank account. And the more I deposit in them, the more I can withdraw. But if I'm always just taking withdrawals, I eventually get a negative balance. And I think we don't realize it, but we withdraw a lot of our teams and we don't make enough deposits to make those withdrawals. And then we look up one day and you're not happy, they're not happy, or they leave and they go somewhere and you don't know, you can't figure it out. But it's because we looked at them more like, well, Susie produced X, Nancy produced Y, and they're a better employee, vice versa. And it's like, well, Susie may be at her potential and Nancy could be doing twice as much if I would just deposit a little bit in her.
I think it just, to me, it the buck stops with us. I think at the end of the day, we have to start to look at our leadership and what are we doing, what are we not doing to get people to move that way. And I think that that's super important. And I think, you know, we talked about this and I said this and I'll say it again. To me, it goes back to so much of, one, do I know what the heck I want? Have I clearly defined what my goals are for the practice, how I want to practice, the type of dentistry I want to do? Have I conveyed that? And then have I outlined how each specific team member falls into that role? Because if I don't know what the heck I want, and I don't know what I want my team members to do,
how can you expect them?
That's unfair.
I mean,
and then the problem is then we'll say, oh, well, we need systems. And I think it's less about
protocol.
It's less about a handbook bullshit. I mean, you think a handbook's going to solve your problems? They're going to go back there and be like, okay, now turning to chapter 3, the setup for the case. Now, there's some aspects of that that may be good to have. My point is I don't think that's the core of the problem.
There shouldn't be policies.
I think it's okay to have policies, but ultimately, if you've developed a culture that they buy into your culture, what do you need policies for?
Because they don't understand. Like my culture, whatever I tell them or however I try to train them to be, this is the culture I want to create. There are things that are unfortunately missed now, more in a sense of, oh, I just really try to help her. For example, culture. I'm all about patience, right? Like I love patience. But whenever I have a patient and you're spending 45 minutes after the hours, 5:45, just talking on the patient, 45 minutes on the clock, I have to pay you for $15, $20 and whatever you stayed in. And what am I going to say? I'm saying, hey, Bob, are you on the clock? They're like, oh, well, what do you want me to do? That's the patient.
That's good, though. That's the culture. I would argue that's buying into your culture. What is an extra $24 an hour if they sell a $40,000 hybrid?
No, it's not that patient is being there every day for the past 2-3 weeks.
Well, you're right. You're buying into the culture. I'm all about that. Here's the deal. At this point, you know, we're kind of, y'all, I know y'all are friends. I know we love them, but like, it's important that like, hey, we kind of keep going. You know, we, you know, you do what you need to do, say what you need to do, but we go on to the next thing. I think it's okay to say, but to me, I would say that's a good problem, right? Because they're listening. They're buying in. Patients are important. We want to spend time with patients. Now let's transition to, okay, that's great, but give them, that's feedback. That's like follow-up. That's not negative. That's just like, hey, here's some things I would like to tweak. Tweak it. Move on. See how they respond to that.
That's also a little bit of the corporate dentistry that you grew up in. That can be very cut and dry, like transactional. And then you've grown up in a family practice that's very much like we want to be seen in the community. We want people to leave here and go tell their aunt, their uncle. You worked in a much more transactional setting. We're very successful in that. I think it's the happy medium is somewhere. It's always balanced somewhere
always,
in between.
Always.
I think if you're too like friendly, you know, I work with doctors that I go, doc. Like how, like you're giving away too much stuff.
No, I get so pissed at one of our assistants. Right. I'm like, stop talking. Right, like right. We have
it's
shit
like,
to do.
Right, right. It's like, so where's the medium? I think at the end of the day, you know, again, I think you have to hold people accountable to their role, but each role has compensation comes with responsibility. So if that person's compensated $12 an hour and they go 45 minutes over, I mean, that's $11.
No.
See what I'm saying? You're paying $100 an hour for, say, like she's more valuable to the role, right? I mean,
so Payman, how would you systemize that?
The system is this:
are you gonna have a handbook that says, okay, you're gonna talk with the patient for 30 minutes, or you can talk with them for 15 minutes, and then you leave.
That's not real. Not those
type of system. By systems, I mean, for example, patient comes in, and they have insurance so-and-so. The insurance information should be all entered in the system prior to patient's visit. Now, when the patient is there, so systems by that, I mean that type of stuff. Like, for example, patient is here, we impressed for crown about a month and a half ago, and now patient is coming in to get the crown seated, but we don't know if the insurance paid or not or what we're going to do. So systems by that meaning... you're not going to get this seated. The crowns cannot be seated for that period of time. Or if, for example, if you haven't paid the deposit to get on the books, you're not going to get an appointment.
So I would tell you, or I would argue that those are not systems. Those are expectations that should be clearly laid out.
And I think you're talking about cornerstone workflow things. That's more workflow.
Workflow.
And so what I would say, I told you before, I think a lot of it is
check every insurance. Like you make it as clear
right.
as day.
Yeah. This is a cornerstone of the workflow.
You have to get insurance.
Like, so
expectations.
Yeah, that's for the front office person who does the billing. That is an absolute no brainer. No, non-negotiable. Not like. It is a factual part of your job that you collect insurance and you check benefits on every patient.
So like morning huddles, that should be a system. Like 6:45, we meet.
That's an expectation. That's not a system. Expectation is your role is this. We have a meeting every Monday at 7 a.m.
Hey, you better be
if
here.
If you're not at that meeting, then you're at some point. Right, yeah. It's that simple. But I would tell you this. I think the one thing that you guys have to, and I think you understand this, but I don't know that we take this into consideration. A lot of these, let's call it, ladies, because that's the majority of the time.
Sure.
I would say 95% of the time have worked in other.
You see this?
Other,
I'm inhaling with my mouth open.
Other offices, and they've learned a certain way that may not be beneficial, healthy in your environment. And a lot of times, you're having to unlearn sometimes bad habits, which is why the example I gave you I think is so important. I think before you ever set an expectation, you need to give people a clear picture. And so I like the Grand Canyon example. If I told you about the Grand Canyon, right, that's one thing. If I take you there and let you see it, you absorb so much more information by actually seeing what – so seeing what great is more important than anything. So I can sit there and tell you, I expect this and this of you. But if you've never seen it, it's going to take you longer than if I take you and go, hey, let's go to Dr. Sully's office and introduce you to Aubrey and see how amazing she does at this role. And that's the role I want you to do. And what you also build is – in interconnected allies, meaning so that girl then goes to Aubrey 2 weeks later and goes, hey, I'm really struggling with this. Can you help me with this? And you create these synergy between great people, right? That's what you guys do. You said that earlier. You guys go to these meetings, you get around great people, and it rubs off on you, right? You got to do the same thing for your staff, though. Think about it. Have you ever really put your staff around other great people in their same roles?
So this is my right now. I mean, when we were talking about it, the more things it goes back in my mind, thinking about what I'm doing. So this is right now. It's happening at my office, for example, is the culture is great. Everybody likes each other. Amazing team. There's a lot of synergy. However, there are communication issues. I feel like they need to get trained on
how are you communicating?
I am going to buy those walkie-talkie that you bought last week.
Everybody just walks up to everybody at your office and says, hey, I need this.
Yeah.
I need walkie-talkies.
No, not walkie-talkie. Whatever you had, those
radios.
Headsets.
Yeah. It's like a no-brainer.
That's what
it's
I need
like 180
to get.
Bucks for 10 of them.
Are they good, though?
We love them.
Yeah,
they
I
work?
Like the way it works.
They work?
Well, here's why. Because here's the thing. It doesn't keep – I think – communication has to keep everybody in the same lane. Because think about how a day works. You may come up to me and say, hey, Daniel, I need you to do this. And I start on that. And then 5 minutes later, Sully walks up and goes, hey, can you help me with this? So I get 80% done with what you asked me. And then I start 20% in this other thing. So nothing really gets 100% completed with excellence. Because at the end of the day, you're looking for excellence. There's good, great, and there's excellent, right? And you're always on. I mean, if you're bad, you're not going to work for me.
No, I want excellent.
But there's good, great, and there's excellent. And so you have to find ways to get people. If they're good, how do I grow you to great and then to excellent? Communication is one of those avenues. And you have to always streamline communication like these guys do because it keeps everybody laser focused in one lane. If somebody can come up and divert me to over here when you really needed me to finish this first, now I'm discombobulated, if you will. And I've seen that. I've been in your practice. I've seen that where something changes and then everybody is shifting in a different direction. And that thing that should have really been finished doesn't get completely finished, right?
Yeah, correct.
So communication then would go, hey, all right, I heard you over the walkie. Give me 5 more minutes. I'm going to finish this. And in 5 minutes, I'll get to that. Or 10, right? So the communication aspect. But if you come up to me and then he doesn't know you've switched my lane, and then you see where it can...
Do you wear the headset?
No.
So how are you going to communicate with them?
I have one in my office that if we're there. But if I'm working, I'm with somebody who has one.
And then you tell them to tell somebody else to do this?
Or they'll say, hey, Melanie needs a hygiene check when you get up here in a second. So that works out really well because I'm less of a distraction. And then if I'm in an office, I got one so I can hear it. It's just on loud so we can
hear. That's good.
But it's been good. I mean,
but everybody hears it though. See, the difference is I'm one-on-one communicating you versus if I get on a headset and everybody's on that same channel.
Same page.
Then I hear, okay.
I know that she's doing it.
Right. I can't then walk up to you and change, ask you to change because I just heard you were told to go do this. That. Right. So I know, okay,
yeah,
that's going
to happen.
Like
I go to one of them telling this.
I've watched you do it.
And then she's like, oh, you told me this last week to do. And then what did you, I mean, oh my God.
And I'm telling you, if there's, and I'll kind of reiterate it because I talked about it off air, I guess. One of the biggest things that's helped us with our communication this past year. Or the systems or expectations or whatever the heck you want to call it, is when we started outlining the 3 most important things that each employee does. I thought, I mean, because it simplifies things, because I said, hey, Christina, one of my front office ladies, I said, I had her write down the 3 most important things that she thought that she did for me. Then I wrote down the 3 most important things. And I said, there's no wrong answers, no right answers. Tell me the things you do. So she told me, and you know, and some of them are, that's important. Some of them aren't as important. And then it's not a top 3.
So top 3 to you or to the practice?
It's the same thing.
He is the practice.
I am the
you
practice,
are the
right?
Practice.
Like I have the,
it's got to be
like,
top 3 like, to you.
So you can be selfish.
Yeah. Oh, dude. 100%. That no one gets,
who
no
writes
one gets
their
paired,
checks.
No one gets paired. the owner and dentist should 100% be selfish because if you're not happy, they're not happy.
Right.
Right. Like how many happy days they have when you're pissed off?
Well, and that's the thing I see is you guys, when y'all are happy, take it out on them. And that's unfair.
Right. It is.
If you haven't set clear like top 3, I love that. These are the top 3 most, and granted, we all know this. The top 3 are what you're going to do. Mainly, but there's all. I mean,
100%.
I mean, taking out the trash. I mean, making sure the bathroom's clean. Those are things that just naturally
there's
happen.
Tangible.
Those should never be in the top 3, right? Like it shouldn't be my top 3 is the trash is always taken out.
But,
right?
But there's like certain things are just bam.
Right, and I think that
my office, like for example, the front office needs to look clean for me. Like if they have drinks on the desk on the lobby in the living room where the patients come in, like I get upset because. Or if they're chewing gum in there when the patient just got surgery, or they're talking about food.
So, but define that in a larger. So let's take that for instance. Drill.
Well, I don't know what top 3 are.
But
are they money related?
So, bingo. That. Thank you. That's exactly what I needed to hear. Though, go with it.
I would say the top. So your top 3, and you've already said it. Define it like this. Say, hey, girls, I want the Ritz-Carlton experience.
Experience need to be
so. So
here's.
So that's the top 3, and then below that you go. When you go to a Ritz-Carlton, is there cups sitting around the lobby? Or is the front desk lady chewing gum? Does the bathroom stink? Right. So you would call that one
so
of my top 3.
So what about
all
the talks we had last week, or all these consultants talking about the vision that needs to be all everybody needs to put in?
Because
the authorship of you need to give them control and all that.
It's
bullshit.
Important. It's important for them to buy in and build it.
Yeah.
And you just help direct them. You get them to say what you want them to say.
So it's dictatorship.
It's not dictatorship. It's democracy, but it's allowing them to get to when you outline your vision and you get people that support your vision, you can come up with your own vision for the practice that's like, hey, we do together, but ultimately your vision.
So let me give you an example. So let's take what I'm talking about. So let's name one of your top 3. We'll call it the Ritz-Carlton experience.
But
okay?
Patient
experience for me is number 1.
Let me give
you
a real
before
practical.
You go through this, I want to say one thing. The aspect of this is interesting. Is like you don't know the top 3 things that each of your employees does for you or what you want them
correct.
To
correct.
So if you don't know them,
they don't know.
How the heck are right. they supposed to know
right.
them? Does that make sense?
It's a lot of, I mean, it makes me look so dumb right now.
No, it's not. Because this is every, dude, this is me.
Yeah, this is every dentist. This is why you're talking about this. Yeah. But let's practically talk about one. Let's call it the Ritz-Carlton Experience for your experience. Office.
Because that's a great one. Like, that's a great one for the front office.
And here's what you're talking about to not be a dictator. So here's what you would say. You give you an example. So girls, these are one of my top three is this Ritz-Carlton Experience. Under that, one of the things that's really important to me, Dr. Payton, is I really want a really nice, clean front office. How can we make that happen? And you say nothing after that. And you let them then define how we're going to do that. So for you, it may be, I don't want to come in at 7 o'clock and it be dirty. But that may not be feasible for them to get there at 6:30. It may be that, well, our first patient we don't see till 8. So then they define the expectation of, okay, doc, we don't see our first patient till 8, so we'll have it cleaned by 7:30. So that may mean when you walk in at 7, it's not clean, but you know that they're going to come in and by 7:30 it will be. Do you see how they've now defined for themselves how they're going to create the Ritz-Carlton Experience instead of you going, girls, I want the Ritz-Carlton Experience and I want this clean by 7:15. You got it? Got it? Good, right? Now that's dictator.
Or, you know, we're going to, you know, as a team, we decide we're not going to leave the office until everything's...
We clean at the end, right? It could be. Right? So like, you let them decide what's... Because, for instance, you don't know their work-life balance. It may be your whole office can get there early, but needs to leave right at... Because they got to pick up kids or whatever. Or it could be that your whole office can stay late and can't get there early because they got to drop off kids.
Communication is very important to me. So how would we make the communication? Like, I want everybody to be talking like that. You know how you say that they talk with the back to the front. Like, I want that synergy where the back knows the front.
Essentially, is what you're talking
about. Is that
about.
What, right? Okay.
I would say, and to me, that's important.
Well, I guess what are some of those common things that other offices have those three things in common?
Like, one for me, for like Christina, would be that one of the most important things she does
in the front?
She's like the billing person, because I think that's an important one, is that everybody has a clear expectation of what they're going to pay. And so however that is, that means if they have insurance, we better know what they're going to pay. If they want to do care credit, we better know how to do care credit. And at the end of the day, if the expectation isn't clearly laid out and we get to the end and there's a discrepancy, we're eating it. It's on us, because we have not. Because that's a number one goal for me, is that she makes things freaking crystal clear what something costs. So there's no doubt.
Right. You don't walk into Walmart and not know what the milk costs. And
when you get into the register checkout, and go, you know exactly
I don't know what this milk costs, right? I mean, it needs to be. So
she's responsible for that.
Right, right.
So no matter what happens, and that may be, and what's interesting is people's goals kind of fall into other people. So like, it's Christina's job that she will now self lead with the other team members, because she's going to make sure that they're conveying if treatment changes, because it's on her. Because like, Christina's job is, big goal for me is to patient knows what they're going to pay. So she's going to go to hygiene and be like, look, make if sure something changes, I need to know about it.
So let me ask you this, though. Cool. So that's an expectation, but how would you define the win of that? Is it collection percentage? Is it
so there's multiple
case acceptance?
To do it. For her,
I mean, as long as they pay,
that's what I'm saying. Collections. It may be the win for her is we're at 90% collections at all time.
Yeah,
meaning we never dip down below 90 where we're not getting paid.
So before we switched away, we're paying now, which is kind of psycho. That was one way I bonused her. So like, I bonused Christina as, if you can maintain a AR or a collection percentage of 90%, you'll get an extra $500 a month.
How did she do on that, say, for that scenario?
She wouldn't miss it, right?
Because so think about that.
It was tied to...
I don't even know what my AR is.
And it's not like, look.
I don't. But, I swear. Last time I checked was last year. And that was because I hired Michelle.
I cannot believe you just said that.
I know. But it's okay.
But that's so, like, as a rep, I'm going to be honest with you, as much as I do this, I cannot tell you how many people, I won't name them. I have this office that did well over 1,000 implants last year and could not tell me. I took them out to dinner in December. I said, how much did you make this year? Had no clue. Well, that's 1,000 implants. No,
that's probably, it's probably a good problem, though. Like, that's a great thing. That you don't worry about your AR if you're making money.
No, no, that's the worst. That's the absolute worst.
Last year, when I found out it was 170,000, I got very upset and sad because I was like, $170,000.
You should know. Think about that. You would never do that.
And then I realized all these hybrids that I've done, these people didn't pay. And I've sat the finals.
Right.
Yeah.
And now I'm calling the patient. They don't answer.
And see, so here's the thing.
And
though,
guess what?
You
only done
100%. You would have managed that differently if you knew they had never paid. You wouldn't have set their final. Yeah.
So now you know what I do? Instead of looking at AR, I don't touch the handpiece till I know that Gladys tells me or they say, hey, they paid.
100%.
So now I do my account receivable.
But who's responsible for them to pay within your organization?
Two people, which I need to change that. Like you said, it's one person needs to be responsible.
And they should be incentivized if they're doing a good job. Meaning, here's the standard and here's excellence. If you meet excellence, I'm going to reward you.
Everybody
celebrate the win.
So each job, you have different roles for each person.
Yeah, so every...
How do you know who's good at what?
Well, part of it is...
The Grand Canyon. You gotta show them someone else. So if he's got someone's great at this,
how long did it take you to get somebody in that role to make sure that they do a good job?
Certain roles.
But didn't you say when you came into the practice that your dad had built?
Oh, it was nothing like any of this. No, I mean certain roles are like
nobody's here from.
Yeah, very few of them are certain.
But that's good.
Certain goals are defined by the position. So like for instance, hygienist. My hygienists all know that one of their goals or one of their three most important things is that they get me pictures and they're good pictures, DSLR pictures on every patient. That is a non-negotiable, super important. At the end of the day, that's all them the same. Now, they individually, they may have their own
little
additional thing. Like, right? Like,
you ask them to diagnose.
I mean, hygienists can't diagnose legally.
But what do you mean? But like, don't they spend 45 minutes to tell you?
I expect them.
Yeah, they can tell him about things that they've seen.
But they can't obviously diagnose.
They can't tell the patient the treatment they need.
But I
No, but they're going
to
tell
them. I expect them to be giving me I mean, they get to look at the mouth for 45 minutes. I get to look at it for like maybe 5.
They should be communicating to you, but they can't tell the patient, I recommend this treatment. You want
to
go ahead.
To me.
Again, expectation. Here's how I want the handoff to do with hygiene. Dr. Acey, great to see you. This is Janet. It's her first time visiting with us. She's from Boise, Idaho. Uh-huh. Her husband and her just moved here. They're in the music industry, and they've been here for 6 months. She hasn't been to the dentist in a couple years, but she's super excited to get back. We did a full exam, full workup. She's interested in potentially doing some ortho. She's missing a tooth in her lower light, and we talked about an implant. She's super excited about doing that. She hears you do a lot of good implant stuff. She'd like to hear about that. And I also noticed a couple things on the mesial of 4 and 5, if you'll take a look at those. Mm-hmm. Like that's like the softball pitch of all softball pitches.
In front of patients.
So, exactly. And so that way the patient may say, well, I'm not that excited about, maybe I don't want the ortho. Or they may be like, well, but yeah, because that's perfect. Because one, the patient loves that because they like hearing that they're being listened to. Correct. And two, it sets you up. So now you have all the information. So you can say, oh my gosh, that's great. I have a long lost nephew from Boise. Like, you know, how are you like in Nashville? It's a little cold right now. You know, it'll get better in the spring. And let me take a look around. Perfect. Well, Gladys, she hit the nail on the head. Totally agree with you. You're a great candidate for an implant. We definitely need to address these two teeth. And I know a great orthodontist that I'd love to get in touch with you. You know, and then depending on how your office is set up, you know, you're going to hand off from there or whatnot. But that's the expect. And then you like, you're not, are you role playing this with your team?
No.
You know, it's right. It's so if you're not coaching your team is only going to be
as good as they are.
Right.
Right.
Which a lot of their team members, for and no harm to them,
it's true.
Haven't had think
proper
about it.
Training.
Think about how much training you have had post your dental graduation.
A lot.
And think about how much they've had zero training post their 18 months of assisting school.
Well, I thought front office rocks going to do the job online, but
I would say it can, but you have to follow up.
Well, you got YouTube.
Hey, but how good is but YouTube is only good for
I mean, you get down there and you can learn stuff.
Again, I think that, yes, you can learn the practical things, but the doctor sets the culture. Because
the culture is there.
You have a great culture. Don't get me wrong. You're I've been in both your offices, both your staff. Love you guys. Respect you. Work hard. I think that what you're really looking for is you're at good and you want to be at excellent.
Exactly.
There, I've been in other offices that aren't even at good, right? That's a whole nother. You're trying to figure out how do I go from good to great to excellent. And that's, I think, always a challenge. I don't think that every organization is always looking at that, because the reality is it's the 80-20 rule, right?
Right.
20% of the people do 80% of the work, and the other 80 do the other 20. So within your organization, if it's the Gladyses or the Nancys or the Aubreys, right? Whoever they are, they're your aces in their places.
Find your big bases, like foundation, kind of like the Patriots. If you look at Patriots, I mean, they always have those three people.
Cornerstones, yep.
The cornerstone of the office.
And you build everything around those people.
But don't you ever worry, whenever you have cornerstone, one of the cornerstone leaves you, what are you going to do in order to build that cornerstone?
So that's the bullpen. You always have to have people in the bullpen that you go, I'm not paying you to be a cornerstone, but I'm always having you shadowing this other person.
And that should be you too, though, because that's where I would argue, and we've talked about this a lot, you've done a poor job personally up to this point, in which you don't need to because we're young in our careers. But if you leave the office, no one can do the dentistry you're doing.
Exactly.
So you at some point, you have to start even replacing yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You got to start thinking, okay, how can I – every employee should always be trying to essentially replace themselves and grow. It's like I told Celeste today. I told Celeste, I said, I really don't want you to assist anymore. I wished you would freaking get so good at doing – all the Invisalign and all the clear correct and all the 6 month smiles and all this other stuff that you're so valuable to me that I'll hire another assistant. Like, that should be your goal. Like, why you don't have to chair side. You could basically be an associate here if you will freaking own this and do it. That's how potential she could be. Right. But she's got to figure that out, and she's got to do it on her own right. But
so I think too, one of the biggest lessons I've learned, and I have had some great mentors. One of the things that I do is I do basically a 90-120 day and then a 6 month review of myself. So I don't ever set goals that can't be achieved within 90 days.
That's a good one. Yep.
So I do a 90 day, right? And then I would even do like a
30 day.
Well, here's why I don't do 30. It takes 21 days to create a habit. Mm. So if I have to break a habit, it's basically, let's just call it a month. Now I need a month of that new habit. Right.
Yeah, but millennials, we can do like things.
Yeah. But so, but just if you'll hear me out of this,
right.
If I do the 90 days up front, it gives me 3 months to really work hard at becoming what I'm trying to get to. But then I do exactly what you're talking about. So I go from 90 to I do 120 evaluation. So I give myself 90 days to create the new habit. And then at 120, I go, where am I at with this new habit?
That's good.
Right. And then I give myself a 6 month. Right. Wow. I give myself 90 days to create the new habit. At 120 days, I got to reevaluate. And then once I reevaluate, I'm going to do that for 6 months. I'm not going to change courses for 6 months after that. And I feel like the human nature in us, for me at least, that's really been a defining characteristic of who I am, because it allows me to then break it up kind of in quarters. I go, if I'm not doing well at 90 days, I've got to reevaluate. Right. And then at 120, if I've improved, now I'm going to do that for the next 6 months,
yeah.
Right? And then I'm going to start all over at the beginning of the year. And for me, I think that allows people, that there's some grace involved in that, but there's also hard deadlines.
Yeah.
So at day 88, I know in 2 days, man, I'm going to have to sit down and evaluate. And I do it now in my personal life too. I mean, I just went through a major kind of, we were talking about that earlier, but just, I just saw some things in my relationship with some people, and I just said, man, I need to evaluate some of these things. Sure. So I apply it to not just business, but to my personal life. And it's just a really healthy, I think we get so caught up in like what happened 3 days ago and I got to fix it today. And I just don't think you can live life that way healthy.
Or we try to implement too much
and expect it to happen.
That's something I've been a victim of, trying to get my team to be like, okay, we're going to
do all these new things.
And then it's like, well, gosh, I can't, you know, and trying to focus on one thing, it's important, but. Gentlemen, this has been a fun episode.
Yeah, it's been good.
Good content here.
I like it because I feel like I learned so much. I learned so much from you guys just sitting down. I feel like, man, I don't need a coach anymore.
Well, I think coaches and coaches have their place, but I think at the end of the day, the number one thing we have to do is we have to outline what we want and what our goals are, and then we have to convey that to our team.
You know what? One thing we talked about, and we say that a lot, and I feel like I say that a lot, like cookie cutter approach. Oh, don't use the cookie cutter. But if you think about it, there's a lot of, I mean, there's not too many.
I mean, I like cookies. I don't know about y'all, but I like cookies.
It just depends on what you want. It depends on what you
saying,
want.
No, I'm saying it's not wrong having a cookie cutter approach because if it works, then it works.
100%.
For some of the things, you know?
It's all about.
My thing. I'm saying, like, if you're getting implant and I'm going to, like, oh, don't go to those chains because they're going to do this cookie cutter approach. But I'm telling them, hey, you can only do removable or fixed. This is it, you know? Like,
right. So here, before we go,
like, there's not too many variations.
So you have to decide, where does cookie cutter fall in that spectrum? Is it good, great, or excellent? And it may be that cookie cutter is good and you're already there. And that's why it doesn't. You see what I'm saying?
That's a good way.
So
that's his visionary approach. Like, he's got the.
So cookie cutter's not bad.
Right.
It could be that cookie cutter's just good and you want to be excellent. Cookie cutter's
not. You want the cookie cutter that is excellent for big offices, like kind of like that type of cookie cutter.
It's just, your new normal changes.
Well, everybody wants to be the Patriots, right? That's just...
Screw the Patriots. Dadgum Patriots. Who dat? We got to watch that again. All right, well...
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Daniel, glad you joined us. Thank you, Daniel. Where can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out? They're interested in some Neodent?
Yeah, daniel.owen@neodent.com. Or get a hold of one of these guys, and I'm sure they'll... get me in contact with you.
Neodent. So. Now, I'm sure we're going to get people that might want to learn a little bit more as far as those opportunities to do try-in surgeries and stuff. How do they get into... So, like, every city have their own rep, pretty much?
Yeah, currently we have 48 reps. We just have about every state covered. Yeah, in the
48
states.
48 reps?
48 reps. Wow. And we're hiring, so if you know people that are interested, just send anything and everything to daniel.owen@neodent.com.
Yeah, you can get in touch with there.
And I'll coordinate from there. I'm one of our senior territory managers.
We can put that attached on the website as well.
Sure.
So if
sure.
you want to go there.
And then we're at all the major meetings. So if you come to like the Hemin or the Chicago
Midwinter. Some of these booths that you guys are actually going hardcore on some of the booth design, because I'm like, how much they spent?
It's a lot. So I'll tell you real quick. One of the craziest things I've ever heard is, this may not be the same now. This was a few years ago, but it was like at the Hinman, every day to just vacuum the Patterson booth was like $10,000 per day.
I believe it.
Just to vacuum it. And I told the girl who ran our booth, I said, I'll do it for $7,500. I was like, I'll cut you a $2,500. I was like, I will get here early and vacuum it. Those booths are just crazy. I don't know if that, I hope.
Do you know we had a booth last year?
Yeah, I saw you.
Yeah, we'll be back.
But our booth, I think their booth is probably about 25 sides more.
Well, you should see our booth 2020. It's pretty nice.
At Hemin?
Oh, yeah. 2020, we're going to have
a booth above. Dude, I can't wait.
Yeah, come to Hemin. Come see me.
All right. Everybody, work smarter, not harder. Dr. Pei Ray, as always, this has been a blast, and we'll tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.